This is Digital Story Podcast number 778, February 17th, 2021. Today's theme is tapping iPhone video and the settings you need to know. I'm Derek Story. As good as the pictures are from the latest iPhones, you could argue that video is even more impressive. But those files also have a greater impact on your device than stills. Today we look at the marvelous movies we can capture and how to do so creatively and wisely. I hope you enjoy the show. If you're primarily a stills photographer and you like to use your iPhone for some of your work or even all of your work, it's easy to overlook video and slow-mo on your camera app. You just land on the photo and that's what you do. You take pictures, right? But those other two settings, video and slow-mo, have potential creative implications. I mean, those are crazy, and especially on the newer iPhones. I mean, it's truly impressive what you can do. Now, part of the reluctance may be, you know, to keep you from going over to video, that you don't really know what you're going to get or how it's going to impact your device when you tap the record button. And I totally get that. And to tell you the truth, if you haven't explored the camera settings, there's a lot of truth to that, alrighty? You could be recording a whole bunch of stuff that is way beyond what you need or that you could easily use. So I thought what we'd do today is that we'd take a closer look at the camera settings for video to ensure that you're ready to go next time a great movie opportunity presents itself, talk a little bit about technique, get more comfortable with this side of the iPhone, and then when something does happen, you go, you know what? That's a better movie than a still photograph. I know what to do. I'm already set up. Bang, I'm going to capture it. Alrighty, so that's what we're all about today. So let's get started with this. I think, let's go to settings first. So on your iPhone, pull out your iPhone 12 or 11, whatever you happen to have there. Now, if you're back to 10, you're not going to have all of these settings that I'm talking about, but you're going to have most of them, alrighty? So the first one is when you go to settings, and then you find camera in your settings app, tap on camera, and let's review what you see. We're working at the top of the settings right now. A biggie is the record video option. Now, there are six different settings here, ranging from 720p at 30 frames a second to 4K at 60 frames a second. Now, Apple does us a big favor by listing how much space per minute of video will be required at each setting. And, you know, that is right there. So you have the six settings and then you have Apple's explanation of what's going on, which I find immensely helpful. So, for instance, if you're shooting at 720p at, you know, 30 frames a second, which is basically the most economic setting there, you're using 45 megabytes per minute. Okay, that's how big the files will be. So if you have 1 minute of video at 720p, then you're going to have a 45 megabyte file to deal with. Now compare that to the other end of the spectrum here, which is 4K at 60 frames a second. If you, that is 440 megabytes per minute. So 4K at 60 frames a second, 440 megabytes per minute. So almost 10 times as much space is used. So you're looking at this and you're going, okay, what do I really need? You know, I want quality video. I want it to look good. But, you know, I don't want to fill up my iCloud account or my phone or however I happen to be managing my files, especially if what I'm shooting is, you know, my little sister blowing out candles at the birthday party. Do I need to shoot that at 4K at 60 frames a second? The answer is you do not. Unless you're working on a project for Netflix, you probably really don't need to shoot it at that resolution. So what I suggest is go with the default setting, which is the standard HD, right? The standard HD, which is 1080p at 30 frames a second. The nice thing about this is, and I'm going to cover shooting technique, but I'll let you know right now. If you set it at that and you pull out your phone, you go to video, you start recording, you're going to have a good video. And it's going to be great quality. And it only uses 65 megabytes per minute. So, I mean, that is not much more than the 45 megabytes per minute at 720p, but you're at 1080p, which I think is a big difference. So you're getting a high quality HD video at only 75 megabytes per minute. Now, one of the tips I'll talk more about is that on the fly, if you decide that you need a higher rate, a higher, you know, frames per second, or even more resolution, you can change that on the fly. So your default setting is there automatically, but you do have options to change it without having to go back to settings. So we'll get to that in just a bit. So, okay, first recommendation, default 1080p at 30 frames a second. You're going to be in good shape for most of the things that you shoot. Okay, second setting here is record slow-mo. I love slow-mo, and boy, the iPhone does it so well. And you have two options here, 120 frames per second or 240 frames per second. 240 frames per second on your phone. And again, file sizes differ substantially between these two. 170 megabytes per minute at 120 frames per second, okay? 480 megabytes per minute at 240p, okay? So that is a big difference. And I have to tell you that for most things, I think 240 is too slow. I mean, it is really slow. Now, if you're analyzing a golf swing, I would say yes. That might be a time you'd switch over to that. But for almost everything that I do, 120 frames per second is great slow motion. It's beautiful and it's slow. I mean, it's really nice and slow. And it uses far less space. So what I would do is set it at 120 frames per second for your slow-mo. If you're doing something special, then go into settings and you can change it to 240. But I don't think you're going to need it very often. If you really want to do a test between the two just to see which one you like better, that's not a bad idea. Find a nice, fast-moving object and record it and see, you know, which one works best for you. But I have to tell you, 120 frames per second is very nice slow motion. The next setting down you're going to have is record stereo sound. And I think that's for sure on the iPhone 12 Pro. I think it's on the iPhone 11 Pro, but I'm pretty sure it's not on the iPhone 10. Okay. And what I say to this is yes, that's just a toggle switch. Either you're recording stereo sound or you're not. The file size difference isn't that great. It's not like what we've been talking about on these other settings, but there are situations where the stereo can be very nice and give you some very nice audio. I just leave it on and record in stereo. Sometimes I'm very impressed even with the audio that I get out of the iPhone. Okay, so I say yes to record stereo sound. Now, the last setting that I want to talk about here is called preserve settings. And I believe this is on the 11 and the 12, the iPhone 11 and 12. If you go to preserve settings, you'll see that you have options in four different categories. The one that I'm most interested in right now is the camera option. What it does is that if you just shot in camera mode, next time you launch the app, it'll put you in camera mode. If you just shot in video, next time you launch the app, it'll put you in video instead of camera mode. Same with slow-mo, time-lapse, all that. If you know you're going to be working on a project where you're just shooting stills that day or you're just shooting video that day, you might want to turn on preserve settings for the camera app. And then that way you're shooting your video, right? And then you put your iPhone away, put it in your pocket. But then something else happens. You pull it out, you tap on the camera, and it'll be there in video mode, ready to go. So it's a handy thing to have. It's worth getting to know, and you have different categories and preserve settings. If you're not doing that, you know, if you're not working on something special, then you can turn it off. Something to be aware of. I think it's a cool setting. I'm happy they have it there. All right, let's talk about a few techniques. So you can go ahead and close the settings app right now and go into the camera app itself, because that's what we're going to be talking about, is actually shooting a video with your camera. And I'm just talking about regular video at the moment, okay? So whatever you have your default, let's say 1080p at 30 frames a second. First of all, be methodical in your camera movements while you're recording. So in movie making, for the most part, you want the subject or the subjects to provide the action, not the movement of your camera, all right? So if you're going to pan, for example, if you have to move while you're recording from one spot to another, then do so slowly and methodically. You know, be gentle to the viewer. Don't make them have to have Dramamine to watch your movie, okay? Now, so you can move the camera around, but do so gently. Do so slowly, methodically. Try to stay on axis for the most part. And unless you're creating a specific dramatic effect, let the action, let the subjects provide the movement, and you try to maintain a good position and gently move the camera as needed. So that's my first technique tip. Next, capture video both vertically and horizontally when possible. This is such an interesting thing, and this is really where a lot of times you see an age difference, because my take on this is that folks that are a little bit older tend to always shoot video horizontally, because that's kind of what they're used to. That's what they grew up with video cameras and all that. And folks that are a little bit younger tend to shoot video more often vertically, because that's what they're used to. They're part of social media age, you know, Instagram, all of that, which is more of a vertical orientation with the phone. Here's the thing, though. Unless you know exactly how you're going to use the movie, you know, the end product, then if you can, I would shoot footage both vertically and horizontally, because, like, for instance, when you're watching on an HD TV screen, let's say your airplane, your video on the HD TV screen, shooting at 1080p or even 4K, generally speaking, horizontally is a more enjoyable experience. However, if you're going to upload your video clip to Instagram and play it on Instagram, generally speaking, vertically works better in those situations. So unless you know exactly what you're going to do, you want to have both in mind, and you don't want to be stuck just shooting one way or the other. I know we don't always have time to record footage with both orientations, vertically and horizontally. So sometimes you just got to go with what you think is best, or let the subject material dictate the orientation. I'm just saying, though, be aware of both, and that both definitely have usefulness. And if you can, like, I just went through this myself. What I recorded on Saturday, I recorded some really cool slow motion video at Ocean Beach in San Francisco of these birds flying into the wind and doing this sort of ballet as someone was throwing food up in the air. It was really cool, really fantastic. And I shot it both ways, horizontally and vertically. And I'm really glad I had the vertical movie, because that's what I put on Instagram. And the vertical version worked great on Instagram. Keep both in mind. I know all of us have a leaning one way or another, but do both. All right, let's revisit video recording rates and resolution. So your default, let's say, is HD at 30 frames a second, and which is good general setting. However, let's say that you're going to record something that has a bit more movement, and you want to make sure that you have smooth video for this movement. So let's just say skateboarder, for example. That you probably want to shoot at 60 frames a second for, you know, the best look. Whereas if you're just doing an interview, just talking to someone, then 30 frames a second is fine. So, okay, I want to do this skateboarder shot. There's going to be some movement there. And I want to switch to HD video at 60 frames a second, so I get a little smoother presentation. You don't have to go back to settings to do that. You can do it on the fly. If you look at your phone, and depending on how you're, regardless of how you're holding it, vertically or horizontally, in the upper right-hand corner, you will see the setting that you have right now. Let's say 120 at 30 frames a second. Or they'll say HD at 30 frames a second. You can tap on that and then change it, for example, to HD at 60 frames a second without having to go, you know, back to the settings. It will stay there during that session. But unless you have preserved settings on in your settings, like we talked about before, when you close the app and then you open it back up, it will go back to your default. So this is where, you know, you kind of got to decide how you want to operate. If you don't have preserve settings on, then what you want to do is remember, okay, do I need to go back to 60 frames a second or am I okay at my default 30 frames a second? But the real takeaway is that you can just tap in that upper right corner and on the fly, change your video to 60 frames a second, to 4K, whatever you want to do. You can do that without having to go back to settings. Very, very handy, very useful. There's a video light on your iPhone. It's the flash for still photography. It is a flashlight when you can't find your car keys and underneath the car seat. It is, you know, all those cool things, but it's actually a pretty decent video light. And you turn it on by tapping it in the upper left corners where the control is for that. I like the video light in certain situations, especially as a fill light for people. Now, I don't want to use it as the only illumination in a darkened room because it's pretty harsh. And unless you're doing a horror movie, it's not the best look. But let's say that the ambient light is, you know, decent. You have decent ambient light, but the light isn't falling quite right on the subject, just like you'd use fill flash for still photography. The video light in that case can be very helpful, and the camera will balance out the lighting between the background lighting best it can and the fill light of the video light. Now, you have to be relatively close, you know, like 5-6 feet for this to really have a positive effect. I think sometimes people just forget that it's there and that even if you gain a half a f-stop of fill light by using this thing, that makes a big difference. Video is very sensitive to light, and you get just a little bit more in there, it can truly improve your movie. So keep in mind that that video light is there and that's helpful, and that in my opinion, I think it works best as a fill light and not the main light. However, if I have to use it as a main light and that's the only way I'm going to get that clip, I'll do it. I'll do it. All right. Oh, let's see. What else do we have here? This is kind of fun. The triple cameras, you know, so where you have ultra wide and you have wide and you have telephoto. Let's just say iPhone 12 right now, iPhone 12 Pro. Let's say you start recording at ultra wide and you want to move in a little tighter, but you don't want to have a separate clip. You can change cameras while recording and it'll just keep doing it. It'll just keep recording. So you can go from ultra wide to telephoto and then back to wide, all during one clip. The only thing to keep in mind is that when you change cameras, it does so without any transition or anything. It just kind of goes boom. It can be a bit jarring. However, if you use it right, it can be really neat. So let's say that you're interviewing someone and you have it in regular wide camera, the 23 millimeter. So you're holding it there and you're recording and stuff. They're talking, you're asking them questions. And then you ask them a question that shocks them a bit. Well, at that moment, what you could do is then tap on the telephoto where it zooms in, where it's much tighter on their face. When you capture that expression, you can like have it there for a second. And then when they figure it out or that moment is over and they start kind of talking again, then you can tap back if you want to the wide mode and go that way. Now, this is not something you want to do too much. You don't want to get where you're zooming in and out all the time, right? Because that's a technique that definitely is not good movie making. However, If you use it just every now and then and you use it with purpose, it can be cool. And just know that you can zoom in and zoom out without having to stop the video. It can handle that. It can be cool. It really can be cool. Now, once you start recording video, interestingly enough, a button will appear on the screen and you can take still photos while you're recording just by tapping that. It's a white button. Just by tapping that white button on the screen while you're recording. Now, you won't hear anything, but it will capture full resolution shots and it doesn't disrupt the video at all. So let's say, you know, you're shooting some video or something. You go, oh, wow, that's really a nice framing. You can just tap that button, take a still photo of it. You know, then you have the still photo as well as the video. And that saves you from having to go back into the video, find that frame, pull it out, do all that sort of stuff. No, you can just capture it right there. And what will happen is that when the video goes into your Photos app on your iPhone, you'll have the video there and then you'll have whatever stills you took right next to it. So that's a pretty handy thing. And that works with both cameras. What I mean is the back-facing camera and the front-facing camera. The one that you turn back to you, which I do as seldom as possible. Okay, that's not my favorite camera, the one that's pointing back at me. I like pointing the camera lens at someone else. But just know that that's what that white button is. It allows you to do stills while you're recording video, and it doesn't disrupt the video at all. It's really neat, very handy. Now, if you have Photos for Mac OS Big Sur on your Mac, on your computer, then you have more options with video than you did before with previous versions, because Photos for Mac OS Big Sur can edit video as well as the still photos. And I'm not just talking about, you know, trimming, which you could do before. I'm talking about adjusting the white balance, you know, adjusting exposure. Just like you can with a photograph, you can edit video in Photos. And it's not only Photos for your Mac, but also iOS too. So this is really handy because you don't have to go to a separate app to maybe trim your footage a bit, maybe increase the exposure a bit if it's a bit underexposed, adjust the color a bit. Maybe it's too cool and you want to warm it up a bit because you got a person there. All that stuff. Now you can just handle there in the Photos app right alongside your still photos. Super handy, and it works very well. So we were able to do this on iPad OS last year, and I wondered, when they gave us that on iPad OS, I go, well, why don't we have it on our Mac too? Because that would be really useful. Apparently they heard me, and they said, okay, Derek, just wait for Big Sur, and then when Big Sur comes out, you can edit video and adjust video on your Mac as well. So we have that now. The reason why I bring this up is because for stills photographers specifically, sometimes editing video is a barrier, right? Because it's not as fun as editing photographs, and then you have to go to a different app and forget how to use the app, all that stuff. Now, Apple has made it really easy because you can do it right there in the Photos app, just like with your stills photos, and it works great. So that is a big plus and should really help things out. Covered a lot of ground here. So if you take a few minutes, you get your settings the way that you want, practice some of these techniques, just sort of get, you know, cozy with all of this. Then next time you're in a situation where video would be a nice addition to whatever you're capturing, you'll be very comfortable. You're going to know exactly what's going to happen, right? You're going to know what video rate you're capturing at. You're going to have your techniques down. You're going to remember to do horizontal and vertical if you can, all that stuff. And it'll be a much more pleasurable experience. And then you can just edit it right there in the Photos app. So I want to encourage you to tap this great functionality that's in the iPhone. Get familiar with these settings and techniques. Surprise yourself. Delight yourself. And then put something really cool on Instagram or Facebook or whatever you happen to use. Alrighty, speaking of iPhone stuff, we have enough folks on the wait list now to open up a second session of integrating iPhone into a pro photography workflow. And we're in the middle of the first workshop right now, and we are having so much fun. And I have to tell you, I'm learning as much from other people as hopefully they're learning from me. I hope they're learning a lot from me as well. What's interesting about this workshop, where we're using both the iPhone and then a digital stills camera, or just a compact camera, and then really exploring when to use what. And then the iPhone's replacing the camera bag, right? Because it has the three different lenses, all that sort of stuff. And as we continue to explore this, it's fascinating how much cool stuff we can do and not have to bring a camera bag. We can just have the iPhone in our pocket, the digital camera in our jacket pocket, and off to the races we go. So that's what this workshop's about. And we explore both sides of it, both at capture and then the workflow, right? And then how do you manage all this content and, you know, keep it together and all that sort of stuff. The second session is going to begin on April 21st, 2021. April 21st is when it begins, and I've opened it up, so it's there now on thenimblephotographer.com. You can go over there. There's a link directly to it in the show notes if you want to go directly to the workshop catalog page, and you can read all the details. You can sign up for it there. And, you know, the way that we are doing these workshops is that we have four meetings during the week, and they're on Wednesdays. And I have two sessions on Wednesday. So I have a morning session and then basically an evening session. And so you can attend either session that you want. So even, let's say, if you're in New York and you're working during the day, then you can attend the evening session, which starts at 7 o'clock your time. You have a lot of flexibility. So you have four of those. You have access to Derek's Story Online, which is where we're maintaining all the stuff that we're doing for workshops and exchanging ideas, pictures, all that. And then we have an all-day presentation day, the grand finale, which is a blast. And that is on the Saturday of the fourth week. So it's really, really good stuff. Now, if you're an Inner Circle member, make sure you go over to our Patreon site, because you'll have a coupon code there to get $15 off. The workshop is $145 for this month-long stimulating creative exploration into iPhone and digital camera photography. $145, but if you're a Patreon member, you get $15 off. You get it for $130. So make sure that you go over to Patreon site first, get that coupon code, and then sign up and save yourself $15. Alrighty. I hope you can join us, because we are having a great time with this. And I've been talking with our Patreon members about what we're going to do for upcoming workshops, you know, later on this year. What I'm hoping is that by the time we get to fall, which means we'll be announcing in summer, I would like to at least have one physical workshop this year in the fall, kind of get our feet back on the ground that way. And then I think in 2022, what we're going to see is a nice mix of physical workshops and online workshops. We're going to keep doing both. And when I have both options available to me, then I get to pick the right format for whatever it is that we want to explore. So I'm hoping in 2022, we're going to have a nice even mix of both physical and online. This year, we're going to stick with online for the moment, but I'm hoping then I can fold in at least one physical workshop in the fall of 2021. Stay tuned to this podcast and you will learn all about it. We're going to get both shows in high gear, physical and online. I'm having a blast with all of them. Really good stuff. Here's an interesting post that I found on Petapixel, and I have the link to the original post in the show notes. The Apple M1 Mac Mini Review, the best Mac for most photographers. And I'm just going to read you kind of the pros and cons here, and then a couple paragraphs on the summation, but you can go, and he went through all sorts of tests and stuff, and it's a fascinating article, especially if you're interested in, you know, Apple Silicon Mac, okay? Let me read a little bit what he has to say here. Apple Silicon is the future of Mac computers, and the M1 Mac Mini already delivers enough graphics and CPU performance for the majority of photographers. Here are the pros. Fastest Apple Silicon Mac as of this writing. Cheapest Apple Silicon Mac also as of this writing. Full speed Thunderbolt USB 4 ports. Can power a 6K display at 10-bit color at 60 Hz. Minimalist, out-of-the-way design. So that was the pros. The cons were not portable, which, to be honest with you, I wouldn't expect that from a Mac Mini. I would be using a laptop for portable. Peripherals not included, which has always been the case. Middling GPU performance. He thought the GPU performance could be a bit better and thinks it will be up the road. Only two Thunderbolt 4 and USB Type-A ports to each, and is HDMI 2.0, not 2.1. And then he says, there's an elephant in the room at every M1 Mac review, and the fact that these are first generation devices, the M1 Mark II or the M2, whatever comes out next will be better, and Apple will definitely put more GPU performance into the rumored Apple Silicon iMac, 14-inch MacBook Pro, and 16-inch MacBook Pro. But here's the thing, for photographers and photo editing, these things will suffer from the law of diminishing returns. Additional GPU performance costs money, and a nice iMac or MacBook Pro display costs money, and additional CPU performance or RAM baked into the next generation of Apple Silicon will also probably cost you some extra money. If you're running a professional studio, that might be an investment worth making, but for the rest of us, for most of us, if you want to do your photo editing in the Apple ecosystem, the M1 Mac Mini hits the sweet spot of price to performance that is so rare for Apple computers. You're tempted by that Mac Mini with the new chip in it, then this looks like a pretty good recommendation for, you know, most of us who are not running a professional studio, but, you know, we're photo enthusiasts. So again, you can look at the whole article on Petapixel. I have the link in the show notes. All right, just a couple things on Virtual Camera Club news. Inner Circle members, a big thanks to the folks that help support this podcast month in and month out. I so appreciate your support and so glad to have you here. Welcome, new Inner Circle members. We have a few new folks on board. And keep in mind that you will have goodies along the way. So even though we appreciate what you do, we want to say thank you in many different ways. And the latest being, of course, the discount on this workshop and then every workshop that we're going to have this year. You will have a discount available to you. So thank you, Inner Circle members. If you're tempted to join us, which I hope you are, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story. Take a look around, and if you feel so moved, join us. And I thank you so much if you do decide to do that. Just want to mention we have affiliate links all over the website to Amazon and to B&H. If you're thinking of buying something that I discuss or just buying anything camera related or just anything from either of those sites, if you come over to The Digital Story first, click on the Amazon tile or the B&H tile, then navigate to the object of your desire and purchase it. That helps support this site, but doesn't cost you anything more. And those that do take that extra step, thank you so much. I truly appreciate it. And finally, a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. These are the folks that love printing so much. They put everything they have into their website. It is like the kitchen sink of inkjet printing, you know, all the way from all the stuff that they have. Of course, they have paper there and all sorts of paper, but then they want you to understand all the things that you can do with your inkjet printer and that paper. So they have tutorials on that stuff. They have reviews on the different inkjet printers out there. If you're thinking about getting one that's a bit more serious for photography, they can help you with that. If you need ink for your Epson or Canon printer, they can help you with that. These people like printing, and they like it a lot, and they're here to help us like it as well. And they're also the longest-running sponsor of our podcast. If you're thinking about becoming that kind of artist that likes to print his or her work, then click on the Red River paper tile that's on all the pages of the digital story. Take a look around, order some paper, and get to it. And then they also have a wonderful Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. And a big thanks to them for supporting this show. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm working on some more goodies for next week. Come back and join us. Until then, be safe, be creative, and I'll see you next Tuesday. Until then, bye-bye now.